We're told the origins of Johannes Brahms' so-called Hamburg Ladies' Choir were purely small-scale and private. The three daughters of the Wagner family in his home city asked Brahms if he would arrange folk songs for them to sing. And following the success of this small ensemble, Brahms appealed to Friedchen Wagner to help him find more singers. At the first official meeting of the choir on the 6th of June, 1859, 28 ladies were invited to the Wagner household. Such was the success of the gathering that they met again the following day, and on the 8th of June sang at the Petrikirche in Hamburg. Within a few months, the ensemble grew further. Brahms reported to Clara Schumann on August 28th that he had at least 40 young women, and within this larger ensemble, he also worked with a smaller group and a solo quartet. The jovial nature of rehearsals and the non-professional nature of the ensemble made for an atmosphere of conviviality. Brahms could even be prevailed upon to play the piano to amuse the company. It is striking that the Hamburg Ladies' Choir, very unusually for a female voice ensemble of the time, gave several public performances. Both were arranged by Clara Schumann. The first, an informal concert at the Lower Rhine Festival with an invited audience, and in which Clara herself sang when one of the regular singers was taken ill. The second, in January 1861, included the first public performance of Brahms' Opus 17, which we're hearing now. The success of the organization also inspired members to establish their own choirs. Thus, Ottilie Ebner founded her own choir in the early 1870s, which sang at her home. All that we learn from the study, Brahms in the Home and the Concert Hall, edited by Katie Hamilton. We also learn that Brahms wrote in a letter to Clara Schumann on Monday in church. That was a touching farewell. Everything was sung twice over. The audience really had cause to be delighted with such a concert. When I got home that afternoon, a small carton was waiting for me. Charmingly hidden underneath some flowers, I found a silver writing object. In memory of the summer of 59, from the Ladies' Choir. That from Johannes Brahms' Life and Letters. And that's very much the way it may be this weekend. There will be a concert in a church by a women's chorus. The audience will be delighted, and they will be celebrating not the summer of 59, but of 17, 2017. It's a recently formed all-female chamber choir, Voce Angeli, and they will present a concert titled The Strength of Women, a choir concert to benefit the Women's Resource Center of Northeast Pennsylvania. Jenna Ash is a singer, choral conductor, and music educator, and founder of Voce Angeli, and she paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the performance and the founding of the ensemble.
I moved to the area 2 years ago, summer of 2015, and I was searching for my own little area, my own niche here. And I noticed there weren't any women's choirs. I was in Arcadia Chorale, and they had an internet presence. And so I auditioned with Dr. Thomas, and I got in, and I met a lot of people through that. And I asked the women if they'd like to do something in the summer. They were all interested. So it was something they were ripe and ready to do. So last spring, I gauged interest. There were lots of people that were willing, and so we just kind of started from there. I said, well, let me pick some literature that we can all do.
And had you done this elsewhere?
I have done a lot of chamber ensembles in Missouri before I moved. I was in a graduate program in choral conducting, and there were quite a few students that had different ensembles, and I was in two young adult groups that were formed after grad school, but none that were all female.
And what is it about the human voice in a choral setting that has drawn you? And then, above and beyond that, the women's choral experience.
Yes. Singing is a whole nother level of vulnerability. It's an instrument that's inside your body, and you're attached to it. And so it's a mental thing. It's almost an energetic thing as well. Physiologically, there's been research that when you breathe together and then your heartbeats sync together in a choir, and I think that women naturally have a spiritual, intuitive side to them, and so that's what makes women so great at choral singing and makes the ensemble special.
So you have then now been coming together and saying, oh, we love this, we'll do this, this is a wonderful piece. And is it a cooperative venture in that sense?
Definitely. It's very collaborative. That was my goal from the outset. I was kind of the founder in that I sparked the idea, but ever since then, there have been so many creative ideas from the members. Last year, there were 16 of us. This year there's one extra, but there's been some moving in and out. There's a couple college students that were away for the summer. There were some new voices that I found. And so everybody brings something to the table. In fact, in my program, where we have the women listed, we also have their strengths that they bring to the choir listed in there. So we all bring something special to the group, and we all are free to speak our minds during rehearsals. And that really heightens the musicianship, or the level of musicianship that we're able to get to.
How did you choose that exquisite name?
Actually, I can't take any credit for it. I had very normal names like the Women's Choir of Northeast Pennsylvania in mind, and I brought it to the group, and just as our nature is collaborative, everyone thought of ideas, and we went the Latin route. There were a few people that thought of Voices of Angels, and so the Latin is Voce Angeli, so it just came out of collaboration.
It also is evident that you're wanting not just to make beautiful music, but you're also wanting to be part of the community in a way that what you do has a ripple effect on different levels.
Yes. Not only did we want to create a women's choir, but we also wanted to use it as a vehicle, as our creative means to make a difference in the community that we're in. We have members from all over the area, from up north Clark Summit all the way down Wilkes-Barre and even more southern locations. And we all get together for that common goal of raising money for a charity that we all agree on every summer. The Women's Resource Center is our beneficiary this year. And we couldn't think of a better beneficiary for this year considering the political and social climate that we're in right now.
And so you got together and you said, there is so much wonderful music out there. How did you set up the program?
It's like chasing a bunch of different rabbit holes. So I feel a little like Alice in Wonderland when I'm creating these programs. I find that that's my biggest strength to bring to the choir is the programming. And so a couple of them are people I knew from Missouri. One arranger is a colleague. Another arranger is someone that graduated from the same university as I did in Missouri. Some of them I was introduced to, they were female composers that have been on our Arcadia concerts before, and I thought, let me see what else they've done and see if they've worked for women's choir, because most generally, composers that are female also understand how to compose for females. And so it just goes from there. I have found actually quite a few dissertations online about women's choral composers, and so I've looked there as well and seen where there are trends and patterns, and then we put stuff together there. I do want to say, though, a lot of times our programs are very modern. In fact, this one, there are only two composers that aren't living. And so that, I think, is because of the nature of the women's choir being such a new type of choir. And also, I think it gives us a relationship with composers. For example, I've reached out to two or three of the people that compose pieces on our concert list, and they've given us suggestions on how to do the music just as they imagined. So one of those people is Sarah Quartel. She's actually in Canada. She's a Canadian composer, and we're doing a piece of hers that is four movements. It's right after intermission, and it's a cappella, and each movement is a different aspect of the Canadian landscape as she saw it. And another fun thing that we did this year that we didn't do last year, our theme was the journey. And so I spoke often and also had people from our beneficiary last year speak often during the program. This year's going to be a little bit different. We have program notes. And actually almost every member of the choir did a different program note. And so it's interesting that you'll get to read during the program notes and they each have a different voice and a different perspective and how it relates to someone personally within the choir. So I think that's gone really well, and I'm excited about that aspect of it this year.
What composer would you say we might know best, if we know any of them?
Yes, probably Gwyneth Walker. She's a very prominent female composer, and almost all women choirs that have been in America have been started here do Gwyneth Walker music.
And what would you say, from your point of view, characterizes at least this piece?
Gwyneth Walker is known for doing traditional African-American spirituals, and the piece that we're doing on our concert is called Walk That Valley. And it's an African-American spiritual as well. And it's talking about Jesus that walked that lonesome valley, and then all of us in the human condition sometimes being alone. And so that makes it noteworthy. It's one of our almost sadder pieces on the program. There are very specific points where you can hear every section of the choir. And she does a great job of weaving in the texture that way. There's also this melody that goes through it, and then the rest of us support. So there's times where there's solo portions where you really do hear that lonesomeness, and then other portions of it where you see that we're supporting each other in that texture of the music.
So that's like a life lesson, really, about how we are in life in that way. And you talked about the metaphor of the valley and then the Canadian landscape as Sarah experiences it. Is there a sense of the land or sense of place in this music?
Yeah, there's a piece that we have that really speaks to the community of women. That's called Bright Morning Star, and it's by Joan Simcoe. And that piece is all about looking for those that can support us. Where are my dear sisters? Where are our dear mothers? And it talks about all the places that we get in life and even afterlife, and how we're all there still supporting each other. And so we're there, and that speaks to the community aspect of women.
Is there humor?
Yes, there is some humor and some lightheartedness especially. We have a piece that has no recognizable words. It's the first piece on our concert, so it makes a brave statement. It's called Adiemus. It's by Carl Jenkins. He's a pretty prominent composer. And the words are nonsense. They're just syllables that are nice to sing on. And then the audience starts to get wrapped up in the sound. And so there's drums and recorder involved as well. And it's our first piece, so there's the lightheartedness. We have another piece that's called Radiant Sister of the Day. And it's based on a poem that is an expression of asking someone to come away and come on adventures with them. And so there's another lighthearted piece as well on our concert. We also have a number of spirituals towards the end of our concert as well. And I don't want to give too much away, but it just talks about the wonderfulness of having music in your soul.
Now, when do you rehearse? How do you rehearse? Where do you rehearse? How does that all play out in your lives?
Yes. So we have been very blessed to have St. Luke's Episcopal Church as kind of our host. We actually have our one member, Carol McMullen, who is a member there, and she is our hostess, and we rehearse at St. Luke's every Monday. And so we rehearse weekly for a couple hours. It's been a regular thing this summer, and actually I'm a little bit sad because this week is our last rehearsal. And so then we all go to our other choirs, Arcadia or Choral Society, or our other choirs during the year. And so it's just nice to have that time together, pulled from all over the place. You know, pulled from surrounding choirs and just have that time together. And it's always sad kind of when it ends at the end of the summer.
And what do you hear from the members about the rewards of being with sisters?
Mm-hmm. I recently had one of the members come up to me and say, you know, I used to really enjoy my summers off from doing music because I do music so much during the school year and during the academic calendar. But she said, I really like this more, even more than having my breaks off. So that was a very high compliment in my mind.
Yes.
I think our pace in the summer is, you know, this is our second season, and so we'll get better at this. But I hope that we continue to try to balance the social aspects, the feeling of summer, the pace of summer, and still getting this program nice for an audience.
Are you welcoming, inviting people who are listening and saying, that's a wonderful idea, I'd like to explore that?
Yes, we do hold auditions. We held auditions in March this past year, and we will probably in March or April announce the auditions again. What we have done prior is we have given the opportunity to those that have been involved before, and then we will see how much we want to grow. There is an audition just because of the nature of the pacing, like I was talking about. On this concert, we have 60 minutes of music, which is a fairly long concert. It's a full concert with an intermission, and we learn it all together quickly. And so it does require some music reading abilities. However, we are very open to growing our group, and we hope that there are many more interested, and it continues to grow every summer.
And do you have a website? Do you have Facebook presence?
We do have a Facebook presence. In fact, we have a webmistress, as she calls herself this year. Her name is Marcy Reeby. She's an alto. And we did some fun stuff on Facebook this year to really advertise ourselves and to get people to get to know us. This year we did something called Two Truths and a Lie, and each person had a picture and two truths and a lie, and they were very silly, and so it was a fun way for people to get to know us. But we have a group page called Voce Angeli Scranton. I believe if you just search Voce Angeli, that you'll be able to find it on Facebook. And we also put our events on there, so you'll know every event that we have coming up.
And so tell us the particulars about this one.
This year we're doing Saturday, August 19th, 7:30 at St. Luke's Episcopal Church on Wyoming Avenue in Scranton. Acoustically, it is one of the best churches that I have sung in. And it'll be about maybe an hour-long concert, and then we'll have a reception. And you're encouraged to bring a donation, that if you're able, to donate to the Women's Resource Center. And last year, we were able to raise $500 for our beneficiary safety net. So we welcome anybody who is interested to come and to enjoy, and then join us for a reception.
Jenna Ash, singer, choral conductor, and music educator, and founder of Voce Angeli, the Voices of Angels. She paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the upcoming performance this Saturday, August 19th at 7:30 p.m. at St. Luke's Episcopal Church, Wyoming Avenue in Scranton, to benefit the Women's Resource Center of Northeast Pennsylvania. A free will offering will be taken, and to find them on Facebook.com, Voce Angeli Scranton, VOCEANGELI, Voce Angeli Scranton on Facebook. That's Saturday, August 19th, Voce Angeli performing at St. Luke's Church, Wyoming Avenue in Scranton at 7:30 p.m. Admission is a free will offering. The program will feature music by this composer, Gwyneth Walker, also Sarah Quartel and Joan Simcoe, and Carl Jenkins, the opening piece, Adiemus. Saturday, August 19th at 7:30 p.m., St. Luke's Episcopal Church, Wyoming Avenue in Scranton, Voce Angeli.